Okay, it's Thursday afternoon, just after 4 o'clock. TDs and senators are beginning to vacate the curtilage of Leinster House, but your political team from RTÉ is still here. Micheál Lehane, political correspondent, Juliette Gash, editor of The Week in Politics, and myself, Joe McGreely. And lots to talk about once again. We're here in the bowels of Leinster House. Outside, you could fry an egg on the plinth if you had an egg to fry on the plinth because it is so hot. But things are hotting up in the presidential race to an extent as well, Micheál, although it's a bit of a slow bicycle race at
It's a slow bicycle race, but I suppose some things have happened now. We know that Sean Kelly's not in the Fine Gael race, so that really clears the decks for Máire McGuinness, doesn't it? So you would expect next Tuesday, when nominations close, that the party will put out a statement saying, and that there would be a formal ratification at a later point. So you think from that moment on, Máire McGuinness is in this race. Maybe she will go around the country, she will be canvassing, but it will be not quite the real deal up to that point.
So she's in the race, but she won't be actually the nominated person until later in the summer, I think. Is there a bit of that going on as well?
Yeah, I think so. And it could be into August. And I suppose the hope there within the party's calculations is that, yes, a campaign is running, but it's not running at the full intensity of a presidential campaign that can be so difficult for candidates. So you would be turning up at events, shaking hands and that, but perhaps not doing media or answering pointed, difficult questions. Mm. I think something else is going to happen, I think for certain now next week, and that is that Catherine Connolly will declare and will become a candidate. I have no doubt about that at this point. Of course, there was discussions among political parties in Leinster House last night. And it does seem very clearly the Social Democrats are on the side of Catherine Connolly, equally PBP, Solidarity and some others as well. There's plenty there to get the 20.
But not Sinn Féin or the Labour Party. She, formerly of the Labour Party, split with them years and years and years ago when she didn't get a nomination, I think, to stand in Galway West alongside Michael D. Higgins.
Way back in 06. I think this presents more of a difficulty for the Labour Party than it does for Catherine Connolly now. What do they do if you do have maybe not quite a united left candidate, but a candidate of the left who does have a backing of many groups within here? Do they build bridges there or just give tacit recognition? I mean, the alternative for Labour is to try and build up numbers with someone else, get another candidate in the field, which will be difficult because they are shorter numbers, 13 in the Dáil, 2 in the Shannon. So they're down 5 there. And as well as that, there is the huge cheque that they would have to write. And all parties are struggling after the two sets of elections last year, let alone a smaller party. But I think what is very clear to me now at this moment is that the Catherine Connolly issue is no longer speculation. This is something that's going to happen next week.
I thought it was interesting how Brian Stanley, the new independent after his life in Sinn Féin, came out yesterday and endorsed Catherine Connolly. It just reminded me a little bit of sort of the campaign that Simon Harris had when he became leader. Before he ever sort of went public, he had one or two people endorse him as well.
Indeed.
So it could be something similar along those lines happening now.
Putting out the feelers. Well, I suppose this is also indicative of the fact that maybe Sinn Féin will not be behind Catherine Connolly and Brian Stanley, clearly having exited that stable acrimoniously. But yeah, very interesting to see him saying that, and then that Catherine Connolly was talking to Independent Ireland, who would be quite opposed, I suppose, on the other side of politics to Catherine's politics. She's very firmly on the left. They'd be seen as more on the right. But will they be, you know, how many people will coalesce behind her will be very interesting to see.
There'll be a few independents there.
And then the notion that maybe Mary Lou MacDonald of Sinn Féin would herself run.
Yeah, that was a fascinating press conference that Sinn Féin held. It seems like a long time ago. It was only Monday morning, actually, where they went down to the four courts, herself and Piers Doherty, along with Pat Daly, and they were going to talk ostensibly about the case that he was taking over the constitutionality of having a super junior ministers in cabinet.
Yeah.
And then our legal affairs correspondent, Orla O'Donnell, simply put it to her, "Are you ruling yourself out of the presidency?" And her response was,
"No." Yeah, and previously it had been, you know, "Oh, no, that's not my focus. You know, this isn't where we're at.
It's not going to be me," I think she said.
Yeah,
back in March.
And then we were along the lines of hearing that the Sinn Féin membership were interested in coalescing behind a candidate, that was the preference of the grassroots. But then were Mary Lou MacDonald to run, that would be an entirely different story. I mean, obviously she would have her own party support. There's a lot of them. So it will be very interesting. And she's no stranger to campaigning and canvassing. So it would be very interesting to see Mary Lou MacDonald, Catherine Connolly and Máire McGuinness in contention for the role, you know.
I can't help but thinking for Mary Lou MacDonald, you know, as leader of Sinn Féin, she has failed in two elections to get into government, but certainly hasn't failed in the energy that she's applied to being in the opposition, leader of the opposition. And now she's facing another 3 or 4 years of that before there's another general election again. So would the RSP be a choice that she probably in her own mind thinks might be, you know, a good move?
Well, she did say she's not a quitter. Isn't that how she put it when she was asked, you know, after all her personal challenges that she faced, sort of medical challenges, and, you know, her husband was ill as well. And she was, you know, and also obviously the political challenges, she was said, you know, would you not just throw your hat in? And she said she wasn't a quitter. I mean, I'd say the job would be attractive. It's a different pace, a different level of scrutiny. But then if she weren't to win that, where does that leave her? You know, so that's the difficult.
Piers Doherty would be able to step in there, just like Jim O'Callaghan might be able to step in if Micheál Martin suddenly took a notion to go to the RS himself. Micheál?
It's Piers Doherty, or there are many around here who believe that if that contest ultimately were to happen, or it wouldn't be a contest, that it could be Matt Carthy might be the more likely, that Piers Doherty would stay where he is as kind of the chief financial brains behind things in relation to policy and that as well. But that for the leadership thing and perhaps warmth and the like, that could be Matt Carthy.
And do you think the prospect of Mary Lou MacDonald declaring for a race for the RS is a realistic one?
Well, it keeps the focus on Sinn Féin now. I think they are happy with that. And equally, they're kind of making it clear they're not going to move quick on this at all, that it is into late August. And it shows that they're taking it seriously. And it does seem that when Catherine Connolly declares next week, that kills the United Left issue. So then it's down to what do Sinn Féin do exactly? And I suppose there are those within the party, it seems a majority, that feel whoever runs for the RS, for Sinn Féin, it has to be seen as being in keeping with its ambition to lead the next government. Mm-hmm. For that reason, there are some here who don't think that Gerry Adams as a candidate would work based on that logic. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are others, particularly Fianna Fáil, who say you can't look at the presidential election and think it's anything to do with the other electoral cycle, that the local, the Europeans and the general election. Equally, there are people in Labour, I was speaking to last night, who say you could not get a more Labour person than Michael D. Higgins, and it did the party practically no good for his entire time there, so that you shouldn't link the two things together.
Because it does strike me that a presidential election, a bit like the locals and the Europeans sometimes as well, it allows voters to sort of step out of maybe where they would traditionally place their support and, you know, pick a candidate based on the merits of as they see them, as opposed to a party affiliation or something.
Yeah, very much so. And I suppose, as well as that, for Mary Lou MacDonald, it would be so high risk, as Juliet says. This is the ultimate test then, isn't it? Because it's every person in the country getting to cast their vote on you. And it would be such a definite and definitive statement.
Fianna Fáil then. Mary Hanafin, certainly interested.
Certainly just talk interested. About Peter Power for a while. As well. It's still very unclear whether they will run a candidate. Mike Ryan telling The Independent today from the World Health Organization that
somebody's been
he
talking
has
to him.
Been approached, but not officially asked to be a candidate yet. He'd be an interesting character. I mean, there was a time, I suppose, during a lot of those COVID press conferences that people really were, I suppose, felt safe in the hands of Mike Ryan when we had those press conferences, that Irish voice amongst all the international voices, and he spoke such sense. So I'd imagine he'd be a popular candidate. But again, this idea of sort of being thrown into the cauldron of a difficult election cycle and all the questioning that comes with that, how would he hold his own against seasoned politicians? You know,
I mean, it'd be and celebrity candidates don't always necessarily do very well. I mean, if we think back to the last time out, we had Gavin Duffy, who was well known from his television appearances and his media appearances.
He did come second, though, I suppose.
I think he came third,
Okay.
In fact, I don't even think he came third. We had Michael D, we had Peter Casey.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple there around the six, and then Gavin Duffy.
Okay.
Yeah. So Sean Gallagher, another one who, of course, who had stood and who was very well known, and he wasn't very successful either.
No.
So the celebrity candidate doesn't always work.
It's not
although sometimes they do too. I mean, Mary McAleese was an import back in 1997 for Fianna Fáil, wasn't she?
Yeah. Different though, wasn't it? It was a different type of celebrity and was seen to have a lot of weight built up over the years across different fields, whether it's in universities and then journalism as well, was seen as an important person for that moment as well, wasn't she? Bridging the two traditions.
And one of the things I've certainly had conversations with people about in recent times is the idea that it's difficult for a northern candidate to come in to an election down here. This is apropos Michelle O'Neill. If she, for instance, was to be the Fianna Fáil, or sorry, the Sinn Féin candidate, that would she necessarily translate to the 26 counties where the election has been held? And it's pointed out in the recent European elections,
Michelle Gildernew didn't go down well at all. And then, of course, there is the Martin McGuinness 2011 run, which wasn't successful either.
So it didn't apply in Mary McAleese's case, but it applied in those other cases.
Yes, yes, it did. I suppose Mary McAleese did, insofar as she had a profile. There was a profile here as well, and there was a long time in Trinity College, wasn't there? So she was a foot in both camps.
And then the whole prospect of independence, that's the other one. There's a number of people that are out there, they're saying they might be interested. There might be potentially somebody, Declan Ganley has been mentioned as well.
Declan Ganley's a possibility, apparently. Maria Steen is another person who has been mentioned. There is the candidate who ran in Dublin, the Dáil, unsuccessful candidate, Nick Delahanty, who had some interesting posters, which he said were about provoking thought, like make crime illegal and the like. He's been on local radio saying that he's interested in trying to shake things up and not have the presidency used as a retirement home. So he's going on the trail, but it does seem
it would be difficult though. The councils look like
they're going to be shut off this time, doesn't it? The bigger parties are saying no, there isn't enough independence at individual councils to get it through for someone, and then it looks like the signatures here will be fairly tied up as well. So that does look a difficult route in. When it comes to Fianna Fáil, I think, from what I can gather, the view of the leadership is that if they could sit this one out again, they would do it. When it comes to the crunch, Micheál Martin is able to talk people down. He does put them away into rooms for many, many hours for long discussions, and ultimately ends up victorious. And I suppose there's nothing to suggest right now, given where he is and the strength after the last general election, that if that's what he wants, that he would be unsuccessful in doing it again, despite many people within the party who feel almost embarrassed that Fine Gael will be in the field and they won't, and they are the biggest party, they point out, in the
Dáil. Yes, indeed. And it would be fairly remarkable, really, when you think about it, that it was 97 when they last had a candidate. That they still wouldn't have a candidate this time round, because they supported Michael Dee, obviously, in 2018. They didn't have a candidate in 2011.
And then 04 was just a follow on.
Yeah.
Because it was uncontested.
Well, we'll see what will come down the tracks in terms of Fianna Fáil. That will be the end of the summer, I think, as well.
Before they'll be late August into early September, yeah.
And I'm sure while everyone is saying at the moment that, they're not focusing on this so much, that, other things are on the getting priority at the moment, I'm sure it's actually been talked about very intensely and been closely scrutinised all around the party organisations.
Absolutely.
Yes, but equally, I think parties are genuinely worried about the money involved, and parties are out of cash after the two elections of last year. So and there is a view among many within the political parties that it just doesn't really have much to do with the big elections they see at the general.
Yeah. Anyway, in 2018, the election was held on the 26th of October, and I think the inauguration was in the early days of November. This time out, a Friday very conveniently falls on the 24th of October. So Friday the 24th of October, I would speculate, will be the date.
24th is into the bank holiday, though, isn't it?
Well, sure, that's an even better weekend. You can vote on a Friday, then go off for the bank holiday weekend.
It's a tricky one.
And then Michael Dee's term ends on November the 11th.
That'll be Halloween, would it?
Following Friday would be Halloween weekend, yeah. Mm. Michael Dee's term ends on the 11th of November, so obviously it just has to be held within the 60 days prior to that. Yeah. So we can look forward to that on top of the budget and everything else that will be coming our way at that part of the year. Moving on to a couple of other things that have reared their heads this week. Housing, of course, every week. It's something that it's a constant focus now for the government. It's a constant focus for the opposition as well. We saw James Brown brought forward those changes that he was proposing to apartment sizes. He feels very strongly that this was the right thing to do, Juliet. You were actually out, you were talking with him at one stage there, I think it was on Tuesday morning.
On Wednesday morning, so he was launching turning the sod at a development for older people in Phibsborough in Dublin. And it was one of these sort of all bells and whistles, really well rated, heated, and just, a good development for older people on the social housing waiting list. And he was asked about the new apartment guidelines that were brought in. And he said that he really believed, having, you know, gone through the figures, that the government failing to meet the 40,000 target was in a large part due to the fact that apartment building in Dublin, in the capital, had collapsed. And so he said he really wanted to tackle this. And this was one measure. As we've heard, there are lots and lots of little measures that are being brought to the table to try and fix this. And the idea that essentially the standards are too onerous for developers, for builders of apartments, it makes them too expensive. And so they were being reduced. He was at pains to say nothing to do with fire safety or, you know, would be compromised.
The safety standards will remain unchanged.
Yeah,
but it's just the size of your apartment.
The size of your apartment. The number of windows you might have, how many apartments in a complex need to be dual aspect, as in have windows on both sides, the number of one bedroom apartments you can have in a complex, the number of studios you can have in a complex, they've all come down. And other people have said this is, you know, not good for tenants, etc. However, one of the biggest developers in the country, Cairn Homes, has said yes, it will make it cheaper for them to build them and more likely.
I wonder, is there a danger that it could delay things slightly on apartments that were ready, well, close to being ready to go, insofar as there were any ready to go, because there's been such a reluctance to build them. But as I understand it, people with planning permission will now be able to go back and redesign the development and fit in more apartments.
Yeah, and if you look at it, the studio apartment going from 37 square metres down to 32, which is a significant change. And then that new three-bed apartment, which is going to be 76 square metres. So that's a big difference there. So the view is that there are all these planning permissions that don't have to go through the full process again, and that would make a big difference. However, there is a counter view that if you look to future developments and you look to land and the price of land, the fact that you can get more apartments into these developments now, that ultimately is going to push up the price of land. If you push up the price of land, well, then that saving of 50,000 to 100,000 per apartment, that would be lost. The other thing is, and you saw a bit of that already with Dublin City Council taking issue in a vote this week with the new plan, that particularly revolved around criticism that the new requirement for cultural spaces, which is part of the Dublin City Council development plan, that's no longer going to be a planning requirement. That leads to a conflict between local development plans and the new planning guidelines. That is ultimately, it has felt, going to lead to more judicial reviews. More judicial reviews leads to more delays. So I think there are some of the possible problems with it.
I think the minister himself, when he was asked about the creative spaces, he essentially said that we need the apartments more than we need the creative spaces for artists.
You know, he's supportive of cultural and creative spaces, but maybe not in this context. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a, I'm anti-culture, but just...
Isn't he all for commemorating the Normans coming in? He's
indeed
big into culture.
It's just one of the many, many measures that have been introduced by the minister since the beginning of his tenure as Minister for Housing. It was a slow enough start, but they've been coming thick and fast now over the last number of weeks. Extensions to planning permissions, prioritising infrastructure.
Changes to the rent pressure zones.
As we go into the last couple of days of this Doyle term, will he be able to look back and say, I've achieved a lot? Or will he be sort of saying, we've put a lot of plans in place, and we'll see what we can achieve?
I think the difficulty is that people will keep on measuring him and his success by progress in the number of the net number of new houses. But they take years
delivery
to build.
Yeah.
And the difficulty is, yes, maybe more apartments will be built, but we know well it takes 3 to 5 years to get to that stage of people moving in, you know, even longer if there are, you know, challenges, legal challenges to the developments. So that's hugely problematic. But I think he'll be able to say, he's working on it. He's working on it hard, and he's bringing in lots of measures to try to tackle the severe problems there are.
It has to be the ministry under most pressure. He has to be the minister under most pressure since this government came to be.
And especially because of the fact that there were those reports put out and government claims that they were going to build a certain number of homes last year that was wide of the mark. So already on the back foot. His approach compared to his predecessor in the job is very different. James Brown is more understated, but he is bringing a lot through cabinet. As you said, there's also those changes around extensions, making it a lot easier for people to extend properties and, of course, build other temporary type properties in their gardens
in the backyard,
as well.
Yeah.
All that. He has a view that you have to keep doing things on an ongoing basis. You can't wait for some major big plan. So that's why almost the importance of the new housing strategy is almost being sidelined now, because by the time it comes, you feel everything is going to have made its way through cabinet and some of it through legislation. I suppose there is another issue or another big measure you feel coming in the budget, some financial type incentive for developers. And of course, that could be controversial.
Was there a bit of a sense that perhaps the minister was floundering a bit with the size of the portfolio and the challenges? And has that changed a bit as well in more recent times?
Well, I think the fact that James Brown is more prominent, perhaps so. I think anyone who knew him in his previous job, which was, of course, kind of a below the radar job, but he did have a massive task to do in getting the gambling regulator in place and the legislation over the line, despite much controversy and much criticism, even from someone in his own ranks. Yeah. He didn't yield to pressure there. And he has always been someone who has a very keen grasp of detail and looks at things in a detailed way. For those reasons, I think he is seen as getting on top of things now. But I mean, the criticism was fairly full on at the start, and there were whispers from within his own party as well, the backbenchers, who weren't reassured by his addresses to parliamentary parties. That does seem to be easing somewhat. But I think the point I make every week is that happening, that sense that there's less pressure on TDs now because people have reached such a point of apathy in relation to this, not apathy, but a fatalism, that this thing can never be turned and they just have switched off. And if that is the case, well, there will ultimately be a political price to pay for that. People just won't make it clear in the lead up to it, but they will dish revenge on that.
Now, people who've been watching the Dáil and politics closely over the last number of months, I think will have obviously noticed that there was a huge focus on housing in the last couple of weeks. A lot of that focus, I think, has switched to cost of living as well, Juliet. We've seen Sinn Féin, the Soc Dems, Labour all raising the cost of living in the last number of weeks. Obviously, recognising that this is something that many, many people are struggling with.
Absolutely, yeah. It was raised on Tuesday, the cost of living, and I think Labour, Sinn Féin and the Soc Dems were all raising the fact that, and it's not the first time that they've brought it up, that people are really struggling. This is off the back of the Bernardo's report as well, really showing that families are struggling with the increase in costs and how much of an impact it's having on them. Obviously, Bernardo's is looking at the lives of children, so they're not looking at individual households. But I think it was 40% of families were saying that, you know, they were either skipping meals or reducing the size of their meals so their children could eat. A similar number were saying that they had borrowed money to meet their day-to-day living expenses. So just really stark figures. And again, various parties listing out the sheer cost of how much things have gone up. I think Rory Hearn was mentioning 66% per rasher increase. I think that's will count for the pack also. But
you must have had the calculator out to divide the number of rashers in the pack versus the price.
Yeah, but you know, all joking aside, costs on ordinary staples, milk, butter, bread, all of these things have gone up and causing real difficulties. And the Social Democrats, of course, had their motion where they wanted to try to cap or at least get a register, get more information and transparency on the profits of groceries.
Are making.
Vendors.
Michal, that's one. The overall inflation rate, I think, is about 1.8%. We've seen groceries going up by 4 or 5% in the last 12 months as well. That's the type of bread and butter issue that ordinary people really feel. Sometimes when you're talking about the bigger political issues that need to be sorted out, the bigger challenges for the country, you don't necessarily feel it, but these are the things, the bread and butter issues, as you say, but that's what they do feel in the pocket. So they're very important for all TDs in their local areas to be across this and to be dealing with it and to be seen to be dealing with it.
And of course, what TDs won't be able to say this summer is that there's a cost of living package on the way, even though people are still feeling the effects of inflation, even if it has levelled out and they do notice the difference compared to 2 years ago in what they're paying for groceries. So that is going to be a major political challenge. Now, government will counter it by saying things are going to be more targeted and that what does happen in terms of reductions will be permanent. And you see that around the student fees issue. But I think there will be political heat building there. And it's all coming against the backdrop, of course, of that economic uncertainty as well around trade and tariffs and the like that could have people very worried indeed as well.
Interesting, though, the priority, the government have said one of their priorities, and it's in the programme for government, is reducing the VAT rate to 9%. And that, it seems, is going to go ahead. Might be a difficult enough one to sell to people, to tell them that the VAT rate is going down for businesses, but you're not getting a cost of living package in the at the back end of the year.
Indeed. And I suppose the student fees has really played into this, the debate around that, the idea that there's, you know, there's no certainty to people who are paying student fees of how much they're going to be, you know, are they going to be reduced? Is there going to be a credit back in January, despite the fact that people are already getting invoices for fees, for example, in Trinity College, saying that they have to pay around £3,200 in September in one instalment. So it's that uncertainty. You know, there will be a sense of unfairness of, well, I'm not getting any certainty about my outgoings, yet those businesses are going to have certainty.
OK, well, we're going to hear a lot more about that next week. There's the remaining 3 days of the Dáil, and before the season ends, I suppose, the political season, we're going to have the update in the National Development Plan. We're going to have the Summer Economic Statement. There's bilateral meetings continuing over the budget at the moment between the ministers for finance and public expenditure and their other ministerial colleagues, where I'm told they're trying to dampen down expectations. We'll keep a close eye on that and we'll talk about it
here. Apparently it's very tough going for different ministers with the Department of Public Expenditure, Pascal Dunhu and Jack Chambers, of one mind apparently when it comes to taking a cautious approach. And of course that particular axis now seen as a key part of government unity as sniping takes place on the sides on a whole range of issues.
If we've got prudent Pascal, what do we have for Jack?
Judicious.
There you go.
Judicious Jack. Yeah. We coined it here. Thank you very much for listening. If anybody wants to share your view of the podcast, you can email us on yourpolitics@rte.ie. Enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.